Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Well, coming up this evening, Premier League action, including Manchester United at Turf Moor, where top spot beckons for Manchester United ahead of their visit to Anfield this Sunday. Pat Nevin. We'll preview the game. We'll have David Myler on the football show. NFL chat as well. Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe will join us. Bill Belichick has told Donald Trump thanks, but no thanks. And there was the wildcard weekend just gone. Plus, we'll hear from two Irish internationals on the show this evening. Daryl Horgan is going to join us around 9:30 or so. And just before 9 o'clock, we'll play some of what Denise O'Sullivan was saying to the lads on AM this morning. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richard McCormick, hello to you.
Hey Joe, you well?
Very well, and we have Adrian Barry with us. Hello, Adrian.
Joe, Richie, how are you doing?
We're good.
We're good. We're good. What's going on? I'm told you want to discuss an interesting piece you saw on the Irish Examiner, John Fogarty, writing, raising the question, I would say, should GAA players skip up the queue for vaccination, Adrian? Discuss.
It is an interesting piece. It's a thought-provoking piece. I've seen him get a lot of crap for it online today. Largely, it seems the people have given him the outright sort of abuse to the question that's posed in the headline of the article that's been posted on Twitter. Haven't read the article, I would suggest, because it's a bit more nuanced. The question that the headline asks is whether or not GAA players or squads should get vaccinated before everybody else, or put up the priority list rather than vaccinated before everybody else. And it's a bit more nuanced than that in terms of the rationale for it. But that's essentially it, Joe. Yeah, it's like, I think it's two things. It's, would you vaccinate GAA players on the basis of the positive impact that would have on people of their age group and their peers, maybe younger people who maybe, and I've no evidence for this, but it's what's been asked in the article, who may be less inclined to the vaccine, would it have a positive impact in that regard? I don't know if that's something required. As I said, I've no idea about whether a large swathe of young people are less inclined to take it or not. And then the other obvious reason is, could they take it on the basis that they're providing bread and circus for the masses, and that we really enjoyed that a few months ago, and it might be something that would lift the mood of a nation. I think a lot of people are looking at it and thinking that it's hooked around some sort of like entitlement for GAA players to get it just for getting it, for getting its sake, which clearly it's not. But it certainly raises an interesting question, the answer to which I have absolutely no idea. I crunched some of the numbers on sort of cigarette packet numbers, Joe, before we came in there, just to see what sort of numbers you'd be looking at in terms of people that would have to get vaccinated. And roughly speaking, covering both codes across 32 counties and their backroom staff, you'd be looking at about 4,000 people. So it's not either an insignificant amount. You know, I know that in Canada they were talking about vaccinating their Olympians, which would be 300 to 400 out of a far bigger population. It's much more of a drop in the ocean than 3,000 to 4,000 in a country where the spike is very much headed in the wrong direction. Probably raises bigger question marks.
Yeah. I struggle to see the case, to be honest, for moving them up the rollout plan. So at the moment, because it's all very hard to keep track of, and I suspect even today, the mother and baby homes report looms large in most people's thinking. It's like a shadow over the country today. I don't know if you both feel that. Even driving in, I was thinking, just horrific, you know, and really hard to get your head and heart around. But on the vaccine front, so the Oxford AstraZeneca jab has been approved now, which means it can be stored in the fridge. So GPs will be involved and pharmacies as well. In short, we'll have 700,000 vaccinations by the end of March, we're hoping. So by the end of March, That should mean frontline health workers have all been vaccinated. That should mean residents and staff in the 582 nursing homes in the country have been vaccinated. And it should mean 500,000 older people, certainly 70 and older, vaccinated as well. So if we go down the line of who's next, section number 4 is other healthcare workers not in direct patient contact. Section 5 is people aged 65 to 69. Section 6 is key workers. Key workers is a broad church, so maybe there's room to wangle them in there. But if you were to put them in there, you're then putting them ahead of group 7, who are people aged 18 to 64 with medical conditions, you know, so they can't really go ahead of people with certain medical conditions. You're also putting them ahead of residents of long-term care facilities between 18 and 64. I don't think anyone feels good about that. Then you're into section 9. That's people aged 18 to 64 living or working in crowded settings. You know, can a GA player really say when there's someone working in a really crowded setting, they should be getting the job ahead of them? And then you're onto key workers in essential jobs who cannot avoid a high risk of exposure. I don't think you can put them in again ahead of them. Then into number 11, people working in the education sector. I don't think you can put them in ahead of them. You get where I'm going
here.
How
are they down that low? That's the most, like, we could get into a whole league ladders thing about who should be where and what on that, but that's besides the point. I think the basic point of it is, any healthy person should be holding off on, you know, wanting to jump the queue in terms of vaccines for the time being. Like, everybody's priority is now to make sure that their more vulnerable members of their family, their elderly members of their family, people working in healthcare facilities and so on. Like, I haven't seen my mom in months. You know, that's what people are thinking generally across the board. And she's going to be getting vaccinated in the next week or so, hopefully. So that'll, you know, press things on. But yeah. Sean Dyche's point was really nuanced last week. He was talking about this to a degree in terms of how it relates to Premier League footballers, and he was saying that the argument could be made for Premier League footballers to be vaccinated first over there, and I'd urge people to hear me out on this because, as I say, the point was rather more nuanced. He wants that to be sped up, and Premier League footballers would see the argument for Premier League footballers being vaccinated first, because that essentially would ease the strain on the NHS over there, because we're talking about 2,000 people plus, maybe 3,000, I think, a go tested weekly in the Premier League, and the strain that imposes on a health service, etc., etc. The strain is nowhere near comparable in terms of intercounty GAA players. The need to have them vaccinated is nowhere near the same in terms of fulfilling, if we're going to get into the ugly side of it, fulfilling contractual obligations and all that kind of thing is nowhere near the same as it would be for Premier League footballers. Yeah. I don't see how there would be any justification for throwing them up the list to get a jab in their arm before people who are much, much more needy for it.
Well, the other point as well is that it does seem as if the GAA championships ran off pretty safely. We're talking about young, fit, healthy players, and in the main, nobody open to correction here. I suspect it would have been very high profile if it had been the case, but I don't think players were contracting the virus as a result of playing the sport. And secondly, like, the role model aspect is an interesting one, and we quite possibly, I don't know, but we might quite possibly might need vaccination campaigns to encourage the more reluctant down the line. But that is way down the line. And I would say on the GAA front, and interestingly, Adrian, I had exactly the same cigarette mats as you. I had about 4,000 players as well. I mean, if we want a PR move, it's very simple. You get the 20 highest profile players in the country and you have a big PR event and you vaccinate them in the middle of Croke Park and you take some cool pictures. And that reaches as many younger people as doing the whole 4,000. Do you know what I mean? If we're talking in practical terms, the role model argument, then I think really you only need the 20 highest profile in Croke Park, and that does it. And one other point to make, the GAA players, their livelihoods are not dependent. I would think if you're a League of Ireland player listening to this, or, you know, Irish rugby player, or even, you know, Dick Penn talking about the Canadians, an Irish Olympian with this one in a 4-year chance to go to the Olympics, you're probably thinking, well, hang on here. I mean, if the GAA crowd are in the door, then, you know, we're coming on in too, and suddenly you're up to how many thousand then? And, you know, like, as you can well imagine, Adrian, every lobby group is out to try and bump their lot up the ladder. For instance, I listened to, I think it might have been News Talk during the week, and somebody texted in saying, can we not bump the Leaving Cert students up so they, with total peace of mind, can go into school and do the Leaving? So that's 57,000 Leaving Cert students there who might have a case to say, well, actually, we would
Leaving
like the
Cert
option.
Leaving Cert students are saying, no, can we, yeah. we put that off a little year. That'd be great.
So I don't know. I mean, like, it's an interesting question. They're good questions to ask, but I'm probably leaning towards no.
Yeah, I, by the way, concur entirely. I would agree with almost every single word of that, Joe, in terms of the optics of it. It's achievable in a very different way without having to reach those numbers. I had a theory that I haven't heard elsewhere during the week, and I think perhaps with good reason, where, you know, all these people who, well, some people who've been out socialising and enjoying themselves at a time when the rest of us obviously haven't had the occasion or the inclination maybe to do so, that maybe we could identify who those people are, get them in, give them a route up the hole as on the way in and a vaccination on the way out, and actually it would take a lot of the heat out of the health service. It's, needless to say, a fairly fraught and crazy idea.
Yeah.
But
you just confuse a lot of Australian listeners who might be tuned in there, by the way, Adrian.
Somebody's texted
happy,
in.
And happy to do so.
With that plan, Kilkenny will suddenly cobble together a football team in no time. Yeah, it's true. Anne says, please don't talk about GAA players until at least teachers are up there, as kids need to go back to school. Sean Wicklow, it's an interesting question to ask. And it was John Fogarty's piece in the Irish Examiner, if you want to check out it on the website, but you're prioritising the provision of a distraction from a pandemic that you might very well be prolonging by bumping the GAA players up the list in the first place. It seems to be a classic case of cutting off your nose to spite your face. And despite the frayed nerves, everyone just needs to stay patient and allow the most vulnerable get their vaccines first, from Pat. I think we're all kind of on the same page there, aren't we?
Do you know what it's like? Do you know what I'd equate it to? Do you know when you're dying to go to the toilet? Right, you might be, let's say you're on an hour-long car journey and you are bursting.
I don't want to get into the weeds of this. Why can't you just pull out with the car? Why do you have to wait the full hour?
Is this the disposing of the nappy story again? Because I don't want to hear that one. I'm just after me dinner.
No.
In answer to your premise, you pull over the car and go.
Forget about that kind of logic, right? You're in a car where you need to get back, Joe. Your favourite off the ball is about to begin at 7 o'clock, and you've got to get back. If you pull in, you're going to put that in jeopardy.
I put it on the radio in the car.
Put it on the radio. There's always that. Your radio's broken. Bear with me.
Look, before I'm going to go witch on this, I need to know why I can't pull over. No, go on. Okay, go on.
You can't pull over because you're on a bus, right? You're on a bus. You're driving through the suburbs. It's rush hour traffic.
You start a chant. You know, on the bus where you start a chant?
So you're on a bus. You know it's going to take you about an hour to get home.
Okay.
You're busting to go, right? But you can largely hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it. The closer you get to home, the more the urge comes on.
Yes.
To the point that you've reached the toilet door and sometimes you just can't hold in any longer. And I think that there's a little bit of that with the vaccine, that we've all managed to hold out and hold out.
You know what, Barry?
Now the end is in sight.
What had started off as a dodgy analogy, I think, has actually worked out quite well for you. That makes that. I think you're right.
I think it's worked out dodgier.
How's that job?
I think it's ended up troubling.
It's like a cousin of Parkinson's Law. Isn't Parkinson's Law where you, however much time you have to do a job, you'll take that much time to do the job? It's somewhere in that vicinity. You can sense the impatience. You can sense it. Saw a very well-known, and I couldn't be bothered naming the person because it will sound like I'm doing a Leeds United on this person and saying head for it, that person, but like who had just, you know, the daily amount of COVID deaths had been announced, and this person quote tweeted it saying, roll out the vaccine faster, you know, capital block letters, as if like, you know, you know, newsflash, everyone's trying, we just need to, without being, you know, totally docile and not questioning, and journalists should be doing that and making sure everything has been done properly, but on the whole, I don't think we want to get into I should have it before that person or who gets it first discussion, because we'll drive each other insane.
Yeah, I'd be certainly in the camp of what can we do to get it out quicker, and could we roll it out 24/7, 7 days a week? Like, what can we do for sure? Mm. But yeah, I think, look, you're right. Everybody wants a word with the bus driver, Joe, and they all want to tell him or her that they want to get home a bit quicker than is possible.
Jamie Wall is going to be on OTB AM tomorrow morning discussing the topic, by the way. So join the lads as ever, 7:30 every weekday morning on all our social channels or on the OTB Sports app. The news round on Off the Ball News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made it what matters. It's Joe Malloy and Adrian Barry. And Richie McCormack, where are you taking us, Richie?
To France. Their deputy minister for sport has refused to commit to fulfilling their Six Nations trips to Ireland and England. The tournament is due to get underway on February 6th, with France themselves away to Italy. After meeting with the French Rugby Federation today, Roxana Marassignano had no worries about their planned trip to Rome. However, she says adequate COVID-19 protocols must be guaranteed before allowing France to travel to either Dublin or London. France are due to visit the Aviva in round two on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I mean, suddenly we're COVID leaders, and actually, traveling to Ireland is every bit as much an issue as traveling to the UK. The sense seems to be they're going to get this done. They're pretty confident, I guess, logistically. Five opposition teams and not all the matches are away from home, and you've just got your one French team, Adrian. That's a bit more manageable than, what, a 24-team Heineken Champions Cup.
Yeah, and I think the point that it was top of my mind, that thing of you're looking at the spikes around, like, how much do we judge every country when we look at those graphs? You're like, oh, that country is an absolute S show, doesn't know what they're doing, and I'm sure that other countries are looking at us like that at the minute. Maybe that looks slightly more favourable in a couple of weeks, but yeah, I think when you begin to dig beneath that, that you have to hope and assume that you know, those players have been given a lot of leeway to travel and to make these fixtures happen. That yeah, they're hopefully not going to be hotbeds of COVID.
Rich, confirmation of that Munster-Leinster game then?
Yeah, the postponed meeting of Munster and Leinster has been rearranged for Saturday week. The sides will meet at Thomond Park on January 23rd. The date had been left vacant by the suspension of the Heineken Champions Cup. This Saturday, meanwhile, we'll see Glasgow entertain Edinburgh in another rearranged derby. There's an hour played in the first of this evening's three Premier League games. It remains Sheffield United 0, Newcastle 0. Newcastle playing the second half with 10 men. Ryan Fraser picked up a pair of yellow cards within 3 minutes of each other just before halftime. At 8:15, Manchester United have the chance to go top of the table, just a point away to Burnley. We'll see them replace Liverpool at the Summit ahead of Sunday's trip to Anfield. Burnley boss Sean Dyche, meanwhile, has joined Jurgen Klopp in questioning the number of penalties awarded to United this season.
It's a complete anomaly in modern football. We all know that. Just that's not really an opinion. That's just a fact on stats of football. I don't think our players, you know, they try and just get on with their jobs. The ones that you want are the ones when they haven't gone down easily, but it's still a foul. And I think that's a big debate in football at the moment. I think it's beginning to, I think the, you know, the person in the street who's a football fan are beginning to question some of that across the pitch. Why these fouls are getting given for nothing. And yet when there is contact, they don't get given unless you fall on the floor. So I think that is a debate at the moment. I think the referees, it looks like to me, it's only an opinion from the guys I watch, they're beginning to let the game go a little bit more for what I class as non-fouls. But they've still got to keep their eye on real fouls.
He's always quite interesting, Sean Dyche, you would have to say. On Manchester United, Adrian, chance to go top of the table. Last time they would have been top this deep into a season, 2012.
Oof. When was the last time they were actually top of the table, Joe?
3.5 years ago, Jose Mourinho, 4 weeks
He's
into the
all
season.
Over it. All over it.
Listen, my man, I have exciting days at home, I can tell you.
I was looking at it before we came on air, so well done. What's the insinuation about United winning more penalties than everybody else?
Is it divers, or everybody's
a secret United fan?
No, well, I mean, look, there's obviously always a degree of, well, everyone's a United fan with referees, but I think if you watch the Keys and Gray analysis a few weeks ago, which really kicked this off, the point was they are filthy divers, Adrian.
Right, well, I mean, as a reference point, and I wasn't aware of that, the last time they came across my radar was the commentator that retired. And Keyes decided he was going to have a... No, he didn't retire. He got let go by...
Come on, Clive.
Tilsley.
Come on, Clive. If you're not careful now, I'm going to read that out again.
That surely does a bit of a disservice to where we're at with technology now and one's capacity to be able to look back and challenges. And, like, maybe they're taking contact and going down too easily, but it's still contact, so...
Yeah.
Still a penalty type thing.
Yeah.
But then, like, that's I mean, you don't want to go all Roy Keane in it, but like, surely Sean Dyche needs to be having a word with his team and saying, listen, don't give them the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. I mean,
it feels sometimes like they are saying that everyone's a United fan. It feels like more of that to me.
I need to see all these penalties. You know what I mean? Can we just do here's a little slot.
Yeah, super cut.
You should do this on Friday morning, OTBAM, Adrian Barry coming at you, where you sit down and watch all 50 penalties.
It's a good shout.
And actually say how many of them you think were soft. Yeah. Soft to not penalties at all. I'd be curious for your, you know, what are we thinking? 5, 10? It's an incredible...
Yeah, and how does that compare to the general average? Because there are soft penalties all the time.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And like, has it increased since with or without fans? like you would think it's more likely to happen at Old Trafford with fans.
With fans,
yeah. Has it fallen off? Like, there's a bunch of really interesting stuff for you to get stuck into.
and no footage to play online because you'd be sued in yours.
See you Friday morning.
You see, I would be interested. I don't want to do all that donkey work, but I'd absolutely listen to you saying, I've done it so you don't have to. So listen, I'm just
appreciate that, Joe. I appreciate that vote of confidence.
Yes, it was. I mean, the last was you once went through an entire game picking out all Seamus Coleman's moments, didn't you? And then went to town on him.
No, that's not what happened, Joe. And thank you for misrepresenting what actually happened, which was that I rewatched a game, an Ireland game that Seamus Coleman played with an open mind to see. My instinct, having watched the game, was that he didn't play that great. But then I listened to the world experts in football, like Nathan Murphy and Kevin Caban, who were telling me something vastly different. And I was very much more of the view that he didn't have a great game afterwards. But anyway, look, that's not the truth. Get in the way of a good story, Joe, etc.
Well, indeed. So that's United at Turf Moor this evening against Burnley. It's not the only 8:15 game.
No, it's not. Wolves playing host to Everton, also kicking off at 8:15. I have an update for you, by the way, on that game at Bramall Lane. We can go there now. Sheffield United taking on Newcastle. Here's Dave Eason.
Sheffield United 0, 10-man Newcastle United 0 after Ryan Fraser was sent off on 45 minutes. And after having seen Newcastle line-up as 4-4-1 for the second half, Sheffield United have changed a bit. They've gone Ryan Brewster and Billy Sharp up top as they aim for their first win of the season. But it was wing-back Jaden Bogle who's had the two best chances of this second half, first forcing Carl Darlow into a great save at his near post, and he's just flashed one past the far post as well as Sheffield United push for that first 3 points. It's Sheffield United 0, Newcastle United 0.
Now, Scott Parker not happy, Richie?
No, he's not. He says the Premier League's decision to reschedule their game against Tottenham on 2 days' notice is scandalous. The London clubs face each other tomorrow night after Spurs' original opponents, Aston Villa, had a coronavirus outbreak within the squad. Parker believes it's unfair on his players who haven't had enough time to prepare for a top-flight fixture.
It's not about the fixture. The fixtures, that's fine. I accept that maybe we have to play, but it's the notice and it's the... You know, maybe these people in these places don't understand how you manage teams and how you manage players, but you're constantly working out in well advance. And what the decisions I would have made and we would have made, whether that's against QPR, whether that's players who are literally just coming back from, by the way, we've had it tough in terms of COVID. We've not been out there with numbers publicly, but we've had it very tough. And working them players over a weekend, knowing or thinking that you've got 6 or 7 days before your next fixture for them to obviously to get up to speed or to work them, that's quickly changed Monday morning. And for me, it's madness, really.
Yeah, Scott Parker, they're not happy. I mean, whoever first dreamt up Scott Parker reimagined as Mike Skinner from the streets has ruined him. It's all I can hear now.
Oh, it's absolutely ruined. Every single interview, every single post-match salvo we've had from Scott Parker, I expect to hear drier eyes swelling in the background.
Is he speaking in? Is he speaking in a rhythm that evokes this?
He has done. Yeah, there's definitely been a cadence to his voice that wasn't that far removed from a streets lyric or a streets couple of bars. It was along those lines. He had a couple of prepared lines that he kept going back to early in the season about the narrative that surrounded Fulham, and I think he practiced that so much that he'd almost gone into a sing-song kind of mode himself. So
it's very good. Adrian,
isn't there a football speak rhythm anyway?
There is a bit,
right?
Just
that he's got the accent, then it's sort of like you don't imagine Frank Lampard speaking the way he speaks when he's around the dinner table at home. It'd be a bit weird.
No.
I can see Frank Lampard doing that plenty at home. You know, he'll tell a joke, he'll come back to a serious point and then move on with his mate.
Adrian, people loving your vivid story of being stuck on the bus, by the way. Although, Michael Nuri says to me, Joe, you clearly didn't grow up in the north where there were control zones. And if you pulled over for a personal relief break, you'd have a battalion of Lancashire rifles surrounding the car. Any offensive weapons, sir, as you're there on the side of the road with your hands full, Michael in Uri. That would have been a more exciting hook for the story. But still, the 67A was a good second.
Yeah, I was. I don't know what was the giveaway that you weren't brought up in the North, Joe, but ditto.
So Brian Cody, this is the news out of Kilkenny today.
He's back.
23 years.
23rd championship campaign for Brian Cody ratified last night by the county board, but DJ Carey has left his backroom team. Elsewhere last night, Shane Ronayne was confirmed as the new Waterford football manager. The Mitchelstown native replaces Benji Whelan there on a 2-year term.
Curious, Kilkenny fans, what's the feeling on all this? 5-3-1-6, I would have thought he has more than earned the right, not least grander achievements, but even in more recent times, Adrian beating Galway to win, Leinster beating Limerick in an All-Ireland semi-final 2 years ago, there are plenty of signs that it's still working okay. Obviously, he's any manager who's been there 23 years and is not winning at the rate they were previously is open to the accusation that things have turned stale. But I don't know what the reaction is in Kilkenny. I mean, often counties within are never happy.
Dublin skew these conversations now so much, but that notwithstanding, like, you could be talking about the greatest GA manager of all time, and you're absolutely right to say that some of the achievements over the last few years have been within a whisker of him, of us saying this is his greatest achievement yet, in terms of like the churn of players that have come in and out. So I can't imagine there are many Kilkenny fans saying get the next man in.
No, I wouldn't think so. Like, he's beating Limerick 2 years ago now was arguably his finest moment. And
incredible.
You know, even beating Galway last year, it's hard to use.
So you can't have those conversations and then say his time is up. Like, and like you say, like, let's be sure that his time is up.
Yeah.
But it's up. Either he chooses it or it's evident that it's the end of the road. And it isn't that now.
No, I would tend to agree. So 23 years, Brian Cody still going strong. Mayo, meanwhile, what's this business with sneaking into Croke Park, Richie?
Yeah, Mayo GAA have suspended three members of their backroom team. It's after they were found to have attended last month's All-Ireland football final without accreditation. They were caught on Croke Park CCTV. Under COVID-19 regulations, backroom team numbers were capped at 12. Mayo say neither manager James Horan nor the county board itself were aware of their attendance at the time.
And do we know how they got in? Like, if neither James Horan nor the county board were aware of their attendance, that presumably they weren't on the team bus.
No, they managed to find other means and other ways inside Croke Park at the time.
Right, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's odd. Very odd story. Was there even a team bus? I'm trying to remember now. I presume there was a team bus for the All-Ireland final.
I think so, yeah. Does the bus drive in underneath and then there's somebody with a checkboard checking off the numbers, whatever? I don't know how that works, but that seems so weird. Like, that without the knowledge of the county board that they'd put the tracksuits on, I presume, and just rock up and go, here, where with them? Weird.
That's an odd one. Peter Leahy, meanwhile?
Yeah, he stepped down as Mayo women's football manager after 3 years at the helm. He is set to link up with Bernard Flynn's coaching staff with the Meath under-20s. Meanwhile, Bohemians have signed Stephen Mallon from Sheffield United. The Republic of Ireland under-21 winger spent last season on loan at Derry City. Bows are also believed to be leading the race to sign Linfield's former Waterford midfielder Bastian Airy. And Masters organisers are hopeful of staging this year's tournament in front of limited numbers of patrons. Last year's edition was, of course, postponed until November and played out behind closed doors. But despite increasing case numbers and deaths in the state of Georgia of late, Augusta chairman Fred Ridley is confident of hosting a limited number of spectators come April.
Okay, very good. That is our news round done for this evening. Sheffield United have just scored a penalty against Newcastle on 73 minutes. They are miserably stuck in the bottom of the table on 2 points, so tonight and 3 points would be very welcome indeed. We're taking a short break. We'll bring you Manchester United team news after the break. We'll chat to Pat Nevin. Richie, thank you.
Cheers, lads.
Adrian Barry, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.